out work, but one of the things that actually Representative Donnelly probably had more experience than anyone at this residency question. At some point, we're charged with upholding constitutional standards, both federal and state, and some of these things just bump right into equal access or equal protection clauses of the Constitution, and we have to kind of say we can't make those kinds of discriminations that involve how long someone has been in a place. But your one comment about discrimination between, say, the 63-year-old now under the annuity program and the 65 or 66-year-old person now, that kind of discrimination is absolutely true in the annuity approach. That's one of the limitations, if you will, of the annuity approach. It has some strengths, it achieves some purposes, but it has some problems, one of which is the distinction made between existing bonus recipients and new bonus recipients that would be, if they wanted all the 250 as opposed to a declining bonus, they would have to annually put their permanent fund dividend towards this annuity account. That, even though that's can be viewed, I think, honestly, as an equity or an unfairness, it is legal in the sense that you are still treating all 65-year-olds the same. You are still treating all 63-year-olds the same. And we have many programs that are based on treating people of different ages differently, as long as you treat everybody of that same age the same. Under federal law and state law, that seems to be okay.
No, you said you were looking for different ways to tie it into the dividend. You know, when I signed up for Social Security, if I hadn't have been paying in on Social Security, I would never got any Social Security. My union union pension is also because I paid in during the years, over years, for 40 years to the union, and so I'm getting a union pension. Well, now, this bonus, like I say, if you tie in all those things, participation, that you have to have paid in something, someplace along the line to the state of Alaska, not just be here. Either tax, property tax, or time in Alaska before 1979. You've got to make a cutoff date sometime. Otherwise, it's going to be like you said, $50-60 million a year. But you can also cut out some of these people that have only been up here for 2 or 3 years that are drawing. Put them on the annuity plan and start reducing them $10 a month every year or something like that. I maintain that the people that's been drawing the bonus now for the last 15 years or so, whenever it started, we should have a cost of living allowance just like Social Security puts in. I've already had one cost of living allowance on Social Security in a year and a half. But you keep taking the open end, taking people in, and like you say, you're going to have to reduce it 5% a month or a year or whatever. You have to reduce it instead of giving you more.
Representative Donnelly, do you have any comments?
Well, Tom, it's a real interesting idea. Believe me, before I introduced the 2-year residency bill last year, we batted around a lot of ideas. But the bottom line with it is, in any federal court, the longest residency requirement's ever been allowed has been 2 years. And so that's why we went for 2 years, because we're pushing the envelope there. We're on uncharted constitutional grounds there. We think we got a good case. We don't know if we're going to win or not.
Well, you've got a beginning. You dropped it over to 2 years.
Yeah, we
like
did that
one
this
lady
year.
Told me last night, she believes it should be 5 years.
Well, yeah, and I don't object to that. It's just that we lose in 5 years.
And
we definitely lose in court. And I think there has been federal court decisions that upheld 2-year residency for certain programs, very limited. And that's the most it's ever been upheld. So that's why we went with 2 years, because that's in good conscience, that the most we could advocate for under the existing federal constitution.
Well, you probably read where one or two people have volunteered the idea of paying $10 per month of residency. In other words, if you've been here 30 years, you'd get $300. Well, I could get $400.
Yeah, it just doesn't work.
$420.
Yeah, we lost that one in four.
But I don't think that's a good program with that idea.
We lost that one. But with your idea, and I was just sitting here doing a little brainstorm on it, one of the flaws in it, it would be that your payment's fixed, but your input on the front end, what was variable? Because different people paid different levels of taxes back then, and some people might not have paid anything but have been here for 40 years and were on a subsistence lifestyle and didn't pay an income tax or a property tax. And I think they're just as deserving of the longevity bonus as folks that chose to live in the cities and earn income also. I mean, we're all Alaskans. And there's a lot of, you know, like my grandfather's, you know, he's a homesteader up in the valley somewhere.
Well, I came originally from the state of Idaho, and I can remember when I was growing up, some of the old-timers there, it was depression days during the 30s, they got on the county welfare check every month, $30 a month as I remember in those days, but they had to sign over their property. If they owned any real estate, they had to sign it over to the county that when they died, the county took it. Well, now, I don't think that we should go to that severe a policy of making a person sign over their real estate, at least one piece of real estate, to the state in order to draw the bonus. Now, I don't know how much research you put into other states' payments to seniors, but there must be some programs that stand up in court because some states do pay a bonus just like Alaska is paying to the seniors. County pension or state pension, whatever it is, there must be a criteria of some sort. You can't just move to the state and start drawing it. Is this hearing also on the permanent fund dividend or strictly on the bonus?
Just on the bonus.
Just on the bonus.
I would point out, I'm sorry, I had a schedule. Representative Boucher is conducting a series of statewide hearings on the permanent fund and its future. And I had a little sheet around here. We can try to get you, though, maybe a schedule of those hearings. They'll be held over the next month and a half specifically on the permanent fund. And actually, there's a little questionnaire inside that you can fill out and mail back. And
if you remember that last meeting that I came to in the spring, I had definite ideas about eligibility for permanent fund dividend, too. And I'm still going to harp like a old song on that, too. Because I don't think this 6 months of the last year being eligible for the next year permanent fund dividend is right.
Well,
that's got to be tailored.
Go ahead.
We changed that too this year. The same bill I introduced that brought the 1 year to 2 years on the longevity bonus took the permanent fund dividend from 6 months to 2 years. So now we have a 2 year residence requirement. It'll go into effect in January.
On the fund two?
Yeah, two.
Well, that's a starter. But that isn't enough.
Well, I agree with you. It's not enough, but it's all we're going to get. it's all we can
so,
win. We can win in court.
What makes me so bitter, I've seen families move up here, large families, 7, 8, 10 children, and they draw that dividend every year, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000 every year. And I've been here over 40 years, and I can only get the one dividend. And some of those only stay a couple of years until they get a little bank account and they're back where they came from because there's no work up here. And that has made me awful bitter.
Some of us don't necessarily agree with this, but...
But even with a bonus, it makes you pretty bitter, too. When you pay taxes for about 20 years and then they knock the taxes off, the income tax, I paid in a few dollars in income tax in all my life here in Alaska, and these people come up here and they're already 65 years old, 1 year, now 2 years, they can draw it. There's got to be a change on that.
Well, one thing us younger guys remember to keep us humble is that, in my case, 18 years ago, I was one of those kids that came off the airplane here and in Anchorage, and some of us stay, and I mean, and that's one of the aspects of being American, is to move around and go to different states. And when the people drive up the highway or get off the airplane, we don't know whether those are the people like you who are going to be here 40 years, or those are the people that are in 6 months are going to turn around and go away somewhere. And the longer we're all here, the more frustrated that situation is. I honestly don't think we're going to change that. I think the freedom of travel and the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution is the law of the land, and we're always going to be bound by, you know, that freedom to move to another state and in some reasonable period of time to enjoy all the benefits of all the citizens of that state. And of course, in Alaska's case, why this keeps being brought to an end is, frankly, no other state does have a longevity bonus program like ours. No other state has a permanent fund dividend program. Other states don't wrestle with these residency questions because they don't have these programs. Almost anything remotely comparable is what most of us would call a welfare program or a needs-based program of some kind that would be, you know, based on financial needs and restricted to a very small, a much smaller segment of the population. And so the restriction of the program is the financial need or the income levels, whether it's housing or medical care or, you know, a host of programs like that. So we are unique.
Well, have you tested the other senators and representatives to find out what their thought is on the proposition of participation, like I brought up, and I'm still going to bring up more time, that you have to have some kind of experience paying in to the state or living here and doing a certain thing before you get your limited entry permit or before you get your guiding license or a trucking permit, or you can't get Social Security unless you paid into it. There's a lot of points there that will stand up in court, I do believe. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom. Appreciate your testimony again. Is there anyone here remaining who would like to offer testimony at this time? Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is Hill from Pioneer Home. We'd like to talk a little bit up here.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead on teleconference and, sir, just have a seat there and we'll get back to you. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, my name is Ivan Hill. I'm currently living at the Alaska Pioneer Home here, Anchorage Pioneer Home, rather. And I'd like to go on record as opposing any resolution to reduce the longevity program. The people that are over 65, we didn't make the money in the early days that the people under 65 probably are making now. And consequently, we need this longevity program to supplement our income. And if there was any cut in the program, a lot of these people now living in the Pioneer homes would have to be subsidized. And the more than they already are, we're subsidizing quite a few of them. And I'm sure that there'll be quite a few more. And then, so I don't know. I'm just going on record just to say that I'd like to see the longevity program stay in effect. Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I missed the first name of the witness.
Could you spell your first name for the record?
Yes, that's Ivron. Ivron Hill. H-I-L-L.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your testimony. We have somebody here in Anchorage going to testify. Are there other people at the Pioneer Home wishing to testify?
Don't look like there is.
Well, thank you for your participation. Please, sir.
Yes, my name is Charles Trick. I live at 1801 West 13th in Anchorage. I'm a longtime resident. Have listened to some of the testimony. Unfortunately, I couldn't get here at the beginning of the meeting, so I have not the benefit of the background of what's transpired. However, I think it's a good program. I have nothing, I don't think, that hasn't been discussed, except possibly to question whether or not any consideration has been given to advancing the eligibility age to 70 from 65 and have a phased-in program similar to what Social Security has, where you could draw at 65 at a much lesser rate if you wish to be eligible. But trying to keep in constance with what you indicated, everyone of the same age entitled to the same benefits. Gosh, I can say this because I'm approaching 70. But if that hasn't been considered, that might be one approach that can be used to keep the cost of the overall program down. I won't go on at some length, but I assume that if we have anything to say, this can always be followed up with written testimony of one type or another.
Mr. Trick, I appreciate your testimony, and I have to say it's that has maybe fleetingly been discussed, but it has a lot of merit, and it really probably that, as simple as it may sound, has not received the serious attention. If we were looking for different phase-in ways, and I would suggest this to Mr. Fox, who's developing different scenarios, that perhaps that be specifically included if you weren't going to do that already, because I think before our mindset has been just moving the whole age, you know, one way or another, or say from 65 to 70 or a year at a time, but clearly the way you've described it, you could have a phase in of reduced benefits or even a phasing up of till maximum benefits at a later age. Clearly, economically, there's some good rationale for that. One of my personal problems with some of the phasing out of the bonus for all recipients has been the irony of taking your now, say, 75-year-old person who's received the bonus for a number of years and phasing his or her bonus out $10 or $15 or $20 a month for the duration, really, of their lives. And so that the older they get, the poorer we make them when their needs are just the opposite. And I think, as someone from the administration testified, that even through age 70, the income levels statistically we're finding are overall fairly high. It's not until the mid-70s when people's, you know, they've used some of their savings, they've, you know, some of their part-time work may have fallen down or fallen by the wayside, and then their real economic needs, you know, increase significantly. And, you know, I think if one were looking at these options, clearly that's a novel way, really, of structuring even a phase-out program. Maybe they'll phasing upward the bonus, the benefits later in a person's life.
Well, I know many of the people that are long-term residents have planned this into their retirement income, and definitely I think it would work a hardship if it were eliminated from those people that planned on.
Can you hear him back? Maybe you could talk into the microphone a bit more.
I said that most recently that the people that have lived here a long time and developed some type of retirement program have planned on the bonus, longevity bonus income as part of their retirement program. And with faith and confidence in the state of Alaska to continue. And I think it would be unfair to the people receiving it to just arbitrarily reduce it or eliminate it. I do commend you for the 2-year residency requirement. I think the Supreme Court went off the deep end, but I guess they had no alternative on the original bill. And that's really all I have that would be constructive at this point. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else wishing to testify today? again, I know there are people vitally interested in this that don't always care to approach a microphone in a situation like this. Feel free to provide written comments either now or later, if you like. Yes, ma'am?
Constitution doesn't discriminate between citizens and non-citizens. It talks about people most of the time. There's a few times where it talks about citizens of the United States, specifically say, the Privileges and Immunities Clause, but generally the federal courts have interpreted that to mean that legal resident aliens are entitled to all those same protections under the federal Constitution, and that's the reason that we're stuck with.
That does work somewhat in reverse in some cases, in that we're talking about legal resident aliens, not illegal resident aliens. But those people can be drafted. They do have to pay taxes. So there's the obligation side of that also. But states, Alaska has been unable to prevent legal aliens from receiving benefits. We've had some state laws that have had in them, prohibitions against aliens, and they have been either struck down or ignored in the implementation.
Well,
yeah, and one of the key factors is they're resident aliens. They're people who are not citizens of the United States, but they're permanent residents of the United States.
Well, there's an awful lot of them, though, that families bring their families here. They're only here 6-8 months, I guess a year, you say. I thought it was 6 months. And are eligible to draw, and they have two parents. It just doesn't seem right to me, because most of them aren't paying mortgages. They're living with their families, and a good share of them.
And not being drafted.
Right. I think that's the only thing that I really wanted. I mean, that's been a question that I wondered about for a long time, and I wondered why. And you mentioned residencies in other states. One thing is, it's my understanding that the state of California has only a one-year residency for students to go to school, and then they have their whole tuition paid for.
As somebody who applied to some California schools before I went to University of Washington, I think the situation in California was the distinction. Most states don't allow you to establish your residency while you're a student. California is a little more liberal. They, and I'm thinking from my past experience here, I don't know if anything's changed, but they did allow students to establish their residency while they were going to school. So if an Alaskan went to University of California, the time they were actually going to the school could be counted towards the 1 year residency, but there's no waiver of tuition. Then you become eligible for your in-state versus the out-of-state tuition, but they do have to pay tuition.
My experience was the opposite, going to a school in Wisconsin as a non-resident. I was there 4 years. I never became a resident for the purposes of resident tuition.
And you had to jump through a couple other hoops to do that. You couldn't be taking money from your home state. You'd have to establish a residency there in California. Other states, Oregon and Washington, didn't allow that. There were more things you had to do.
Well, it was my understanding, someone I know said their child moved to California and worked for a year to establish their residence, and then went to school so they wouldn't have to take and their school would be paid for, and didn't want to have to take a student loan and stay in Alaska and go to school, and have to pay the student loan. So if they went to California and lived for a year and then went to school, they didn't have to pay for it. Now, that's what I was told.
It makes for some interesting financial calculations now. You have, you know, again, I guess people do sit down and weigh the benefits that they would get by being an Alaskan resident versus the benefits they would get by not being a resident.
Well, I realize that doesn't have anything to do with longevity and Senate Bill 5, which is what we're primarily concerned about. What I was mainly wondering about was the difference. Residency laws for different states, if they all are universal or?
Well, one of the things that confuses a lot of folks is that the residency laws that are allowed by the federal courts are on a sliding scale based on their importance of the particular right or privilege that's being regulated. So while you'll find that the residency laws for emergency services in the community have been ruled to be required to be zero or very short, the residency requirements for in-state versus out-of-state tuition have gone up to 2 years. And there's a series of decisions setting different amounts of residency in between those two extremes based on the privilege that's involved. So you'll find that there's no one flat one-year requirement. It depends on what's involved in the issue. And that's why you'll find a whole range of different residency requirements in different states.
For example, voting is considered to be a very basic and important right, and that has one of the lowest residencies. Now it's almost always 30 days throughout the country. Fish and game hunting, resident hunting licenses typically run around a year. You know, they're kind of a medium important right. And then the student loan has been the one out on the edge, or not the student loan, but the residency for tuition purposes, has been given more leniency because, my guess is, because states put in so much of the amount of money into post-secondary education, primarily for the benefit of its own state citizens.
So it gets real confusing.
Yes, it does. Just one more question on the longevity. Do you have a set, a booklet, a brochure on the rules and regulations for time a person can be out of the state, when they have to be out, and how long they can be out? Is it accumulative? Is it, everyone I talk with is confused about the rules.
There is a set of regulations. Mr. Fox from the Department of Administration can probably steer you to that or get you a copy also. Mr. Chase, are you still online?
Yes, I am.
If we get Ms. Robertson's address here, can the rules and regulations for that, can we send her a copy of that?
Yes. Is she on the program already?
Yes.
Okay, we'll send you what we normally send people when they first get on the program, but we are doing a rewrite of the regulations that will include the two-year requirement, and we'll do
a lot of advertising and education to the public on what that is. Also, at the same time, we'll be changing other portions of the regulations to do a lot of education on. But if I get your name and address, I will send you what we have right now.
My name is Betty, B-E-T-T-E, Robertson. And the address is 1805 West 37, number 4, Anchorage 99517.
Okay, I'll have that, and that'll be in the mail tomorrow.
Thank you.
Mr. Chase, thank you very much. Ms. Robertson, thank you very much for your testimony. That will conclude our hearing today. I want to thank everybody for their attendance and participation. And one more time, if you have any thoughts or comments, please send them to me or my office here. We've got some addresses around, and we welcome your comments. Thank you all.